Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your host, Jim and Chuck. And Chuck, this is an all DC episode. I feel like we've been really just diving deep into the wonderful world of DC Comics because they've been blessing us with news and trailers and TV shows and movies, some of which, most of which, not so good. So we'll see if this episode holds up. This is the last episode for you this month, I believe, because you are going on vacation to California. We've got, like I said, an all-DC episode. We're going to talk about HBO Max series trailer. We got a casting for a superhero and I Told You So moment. We got my picks of the week. And we are going to spoil Suicide Squad, which is out now in theaters. A lot of people are saying it was a bust. So I'm curious to kind of hear where we're at with that one. But let's get into the trailer park. And I hope you have all of your asset ready. Because we are going to be talking about Doom Patrol Season 3's trailer, which I saw. And I don't know if I'm on enough drugs to watch this third season. Because it was trippy. What did you think of this third trailer?
I saw it when it came out, and I rewatched it right before we recorded. And no, it's super, super trippy. And I'm like, I like the show. I don't love the show. Like, I know some people are like, oh, it's the greatest, you know, superhero show ever. I don't think it is. I think it's a little too weird for my taste. But no, it was super trippy, and especially that the one part where, like, it looked like a straight acid trip.
Yeah, it looked like something from like Rick and Morty.
Yeah, there was two things that I was excited about, and they were two characters. That's what made me excited for the trailer. Like, it was trippy, and then that ass cheek talking, and I don't know what the hell that was.
Yeah, that was super weird. What characters were you excited to see?
Mircer Mala and the Brain.
Yeah. Yeah, they were the two that got me too. So I'm pretty pumped that Mala's going to be in it. So it's great that we're going to see what seems to be, and we know how Doom Patrol is, there's a overarching villain, which is going to be the Candlemaker, right? Darthy has gone into the Wax Realm, is what we'll call it for right now, and is going to fight the Candlemaker. The Doom Patrol's out there just, I guess everybody's trying to find themselves, and you get two of, you get Mala, who's a monster, and then you get the Brain, who is one of the most strongest telepaths ever. If you watch Young Justice, you know how badass the Brain is. So I'm very curious to see where they go with this. And I know that these two, like, in my heart of hearts, we're not going to get attached to them. You know what I mean? I feel like these are going to be just like episodes one, episode six, and then they're gone.
No, it's like, remember, what was it? Union Jack. Last season. He was amazing. And he was in one episode.
Yeah. And I mean, you got the guy with the clock on his head, Dr. Time. Was absolutely ridiculous, and he was gone. There was a bunch of stuff, and that's what I'm saying. Like, with this show, they do a good job at, like, incorporating characters that we kind of never thought we would ever get a chance to see, which is ironic because we are talking about Suicide Squad today. But they don't spend enough time with them, and it's a very DC trope, right, where we get these great characters, or not even great, we get a great performance from an underachieving unknown character, and then it's just like, well, that's it, you're never going to see him again, because they feel the same way that Marvel felt early in like phases 1 through 2, where the villain doesn't matter unless it's Loki or Bucky, and they just kill him off. So I was saw them and I was like, oh man, this is going to be a season review episode where we're like, what could have been with Mala and what could have been with the Brain. But overall, man, it's creepy, it's sketchy, it's, I was going to say sophisticated, which it is, but it's also trippy. I'm looking forward to the season. It comes out September 23rd on HBO Max now. Same team producing it, and I hope it's a little better than the Titans premiere, because I kind of felt like I had to kind of dredge through that.
Really?
Yeah, I loved the beginning. Like, you know, obviously spoiler alert, but like what we saw in the trailer with like the Killing Joke or Death in the Family, I'm sorry. Love that. But then there was just like way too much like exposition once Barbara got on screen. And I was like, oh, save it for like episode 4. Like, you need to set things in motion. And the beginning of episode two, and I don't want to spoil anything, really kind of ramps it up a little bit more for me. So I felt more promise in the beginning of episode two, I'm like halfway through that one, than I did with episode one. And I know you said that you were a fan of episode one. I just felt like there wasn't a lot going on.
You haven't seen it all, so I'm not going to spoil anything. But there's stuff happens that it's not great, but I like it.
I like Titans. I was disappointed with the first episode, but like I said, the beginning of the second episode was great. I think they tried too hard to paint Batman and Bruce as like a big old dickhead. And like we know in the comics that Bruce isn't like Father of the Year material. If anything, he's a kidnapper. You know, he's grooming kids to be, you know, murdered out there as like sidekicks. Like he's just turning young boys into birds. But I just feel like they went too heavy on like, I got a lot of daddy issues out of episode one between Dick and between Barbara. A lot of daddy issues. But I guess that's, you know, case in point who we're talking about. But let's move on because what we're going to talk about, and I'm going to take credit for it, way back in October. And I think that's when we put it on Instagram. But we've been talking about this casting and this superhero because it's your boy, Blue Beetle. Yeah. We've been talking about the superhero forever. And we casted him a while ago, and it finally happened. I think there was no one else that you could have cast it for this role, but Sholo Maranguena from Cobra Kai was cast as Jaime Reyes in the Blue Beetle. Yeah, it is absolutely perfect, and I'm here for it. He's a 20-year-old kid. He looks like he could play, if you've watched Cobra Kai, as he plays Miguel Diaz, he looks like a child at some points. Like his IMDb picture, he's got like the beard, and I'm like, you don't look like a child, but like, Cobra Kai, he's definitely a kid. I'm pumped for this. Where are you at with this casting?
I love it. You know, I've talked about Blue Beetle. You know I'm a big Blue Beetle fan. So I've been waiting for this. And then, you know, I'm still going to hold hope. Because, you know, how many times has DC announced something and it really doesn't happen? I'm going to hold hope. You know, we got a director. Yeah. We got a casting. So hopefully, you know, it starts moving forward even faster. I love it. You know, I've talked to you off the podcast the direction I want them to go. When they did the Rebirth a couple years ago, they did or maybe it wasn't the Rebirth, but his last comic series that he had that they eventually canceled. But I really liked where they went. It was Ted Kord, who was the original Blue Beetle, kind of was the mentor to Jaime Reyes. And I really hope they go with that route because it's kind of like Tony Stark and Spider-Man.
Yeah, and they get Billy Zabka.
No, well, who I want, and I've told you this before, want Matthew McConaughey as Ted Kord.
Yeah, I mean, Ted Kord, like when I see him, looks like he kind of doesn't bathe. So, I mean, it's a spot-on casting with Matthew McConaughey. I wouldn't be mad at it. It's a very DC move to get Matthew McConaughey.
Well, I mean, they've been talking about Matthew McConaughey for a superhero role for a while now.
Yeah.
And I think this is Ted Kord is an eccentric billionaire. I don't think he has to do a lot of acting, you know, because Matthew McConaughey is very eccentric. He's cocky, just like Ted Kord. And I think if you bring Ted Kord in, you can do maybe a Blue Beetle Booster Gold follow up, which they've been talking about for years. You know, and then the fact that now they have HBO Max, like this is going to be an HBO Max movie. You know, you could do a spin-off Blue Beetle Booster Gold movie or even a series. So I don't know if he would do a series, but I think, you know, obviously he would do a movie. But I think, you know, Matthew McConaughey would be perfect for Ted Kord.
I think he would do a series as well. He did True Detective, and that was on HBO. So he has a good working relationship with the folks over at HBO. I think, you know, your doubt and your skepticism for this is fair because it's DC. But they unveiled him at a red carpet. You know what I mean? He was on the Suicide Squad's red carpet confirming that he was Blue Beetle. Angel Manuel Soto is directing it, and he's from Charm City Kings, and he's got the perfect cast, well, at least with Sholo. So I'm excited to see where they go with it. An HBO Max movie makes better sense. I think DC should really just kind of stick to most of their movies as HBO Max movies, if I'm being honest, unless they're like the Batman and the Justice League and stuff like that. Because then you get these websites that are like, well, it was released on HBO Max and then it was released on theaters and it only made $100 million in an environment where the cases of COVID are spiking again and people are afraid to go out. Places are getting mask mandates again. So the media was kind of brutal to the Suicide Squad, and I'd like to talk about that in a little bit. But let's go to my picks of the week. Some of them are, honestly, none of them are from DC because I only have two this week. So these are the only two mentions of non-DC properties. And the first one is going to be called Second Chances by Ricky Mamone and Max Bertolini. Second Chances Hotline. Call now and get a new identity. All you need is some cash, a proper referral, and a very good reason to start over. When LeBlanc, the man behind the hotline, is approached by a shady figure from his past, he's forced to accept a new client who doesn't meet any of the requirements, a client with chemically induced amnesia in desperate need of protection. Up-and-coming writer Ricky Mamone and artist Matt Bertoloni from The Witcher and Nathan Never explode onto the scene with a psychedelic, action-packed, bizarre noir that feels like John Wick punching through the existential French New Wave fever dream. That's what kind of got me into this book. Like, I read a little bit of the preview, and, like, everything's being compared with John Wick. If you got a badass guy who's not a superhero, you got a John Wick, right? But when they said it was noir and then, like, a New Wave French kind of fever dream, I was like, all right, you have my attention. It sounds like something like Luc Besson is going to direct in like 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And like,
if it's French and weird, yeah, Luc Besson's going to do it.
Yeah, and definitely you're going to have Dane DeHaan playing LeBlanc. Like, it's set. So that's coming from Image Comics. And then the other one is coming from Marvel Comics. And what a perfect time. Marvel's really catching people up to speed on these characters. Kang the Conqueror, number one. It's written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing with art from Carlos Magno, and it's the origin of Kang. The man called Kang the Conqueror has been a pharaoh, a villain, a warlord of the space ways, and even on rare occasions a hero. Across all timelines, one fact seemed absolute. Time means nothing to Kang the Conqueror, but the truth is more complex. Kang is caught in an endless cycle of creation and destruction, dictated by time and previously unseen by any but the Conqueror himself. A cycle that could finally explain the enigma that is Kang, and a cycle that begins and ends with an old and broken Kang sending his younger self down a darker path. So think Looper if it was starring Kang the Conqueror.
I like Looper, so.
Great movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. So you got a young Kang played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt going up against an old Kang played by Bruce Willis. Are you picking up Looper Kang?
Yeah, I would like to. Because I like what they're doing, and DC's kind of doing it too, and so is Marvel, which is great. We've talked about it before, like, they need to start doing it, and they finally are. It's introducing these characters that people might not be familiar with that are showing up in TVs and their TV shows and their movies.
Yep. I know DC really did that with Peacemaker, where he was like the forefront of the Suicide Squad. Nothing on Bloodsport yet. Nothing on, you know, Ratcatcher 2, although Ratcatcher 2 is a new character.
Nothing Bloodsport is in Suicide Squad, the comic series.
But is he on the cover?
He is not on the cover, but he is prominent in the last issue that I read.
Okay, so I haven't read the last issue, but is it Idris Elba? Because if it's not, I don't want it.
It doesn't look like.
Well, then I don't want it.
The look looks exactly like what we got in the movie, though.
Which the helmet
and everything.
Which was an absolute badass movie. And speaking of badass movie, let's kind of dive into... Well, it was a badass helmet in a movie that we're about to talk about, Chuck, and that's The Suicide Squad, as we enter spoiler territory, because we're going to spoil a movie that a lot of critics were dubbing James Gunn's finest work. I don't agree with that, personally. I don't think this is, I think this is like up there with like his top, like top four, but I don't think that this was the best, and I have my reasons for that. But the Suicide Squad has came and went, and I remember many moons ago, about a year ago, probably a year ago today, we're sitting in the studio watching DC Fandom, and the Suicide Squad stuff comes on, and we're just like glued to it. I mean, we posted pictures of it on the Instagram at The Active Geek, where, you know, Joel Kinnaman liked it, Daniela Melchiori liked it. We were getting retweeted. We were, you know, everybody was like posting it on their page. I was super pumped. It was like the most moment, like the biggest moments we've had as far as like a, you know, stars of the movie liking our stuff, right? We see like Pete Davidson and Nathan Fillion and, you know, Mei Ling Ying, and we see all these people, right? And we're like, where do these characters fit in? And where they fit in is dead in the sand 5 minutes into the movie.
I mean, one, he kind of told you that. And especially,
he said, don't get attached to any of these characters. And do you remember when we were watching Fandom and we saw Michael Rooker? What was the first thing I said?
He's going to die.
Dead in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I said, he's the first one to die. And he wasn't the first one to die, but he was of the first ones to die. Did not realize Sean Gunn was going to die first. As Weasel.
Or he didn't.
Well, he died in the beginning, right? So, like, we think that he's dead. Is he like the honey badger where, like, he gets injected in all this, like, all this cobra venom and he just dies for a bit and, like, whoop, heart's awake again? And I know he was your favorite because, you know, we got to see his dangly bits and things. But what did you think of the movie in general?
I enjoyed it. Was it the, like, I saw things like, oh, this is going to redefine superhero movies. And this, it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
It's up there for DC movies, where maybe DCEU movies. It's better than, you know, Justice League. It's better than Suicide Squad. Like, it's definitely up there for me. It's not my favorite DCEU movie, but I enjoyed it. I expected a lot of blood, a lot of weirdness, and a lot of, you know, weird characters. And it's what we got. You know, I was very excited that Starro was the villain.
Yeah, Starro. And honestly, like, every scene Starro was in, it was like that whole, like, mini third act that we got. Because the third act was, to me, seems very short. I don't know if it felt short to you. But once we got, like, full Starro, when, you know, Peter Capaldi did his whole Doctor Who thing and let him out, I was like, this is amazing. Like, I loved what they did with Starro. It looked very, very cool. Like, the CG on Starro was clean.
Yeah. And remember when we watched, what was that? What was that TV show that we loved?
Young Justice?
About the super, no, the super...
Oh, Powerless.
Powerless. And remember they kind of hinted Starro there.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, this is awesome. You know, we'll never get Starro. And here we are. He was a perfect villain for it.
Was he, though?
I think,
like,
so.
Was he... He was the perfect villain for a James Gunn movie.
Yeah, but I said, like, for it.
Yeah, but, like, when you think of, like, Starro for a villain itself, right? That's the Justice League's first villain.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we were kind of robbed of seeing the Justice League try to tackle much more formidable foe. And, like, it could possibly happen because maybe this was just, like, part of a hive mind of Starro. But I would have rather, I don't know. I know, like, early scripts saw this version of the team going after Superman. And I thought that that would have been really, really cool. I don't think anybody would have made it out after that. Like, how do you kill Superman? But I don't know if I would have liked to see the Justice League go up against Starro.
I mean, for nostalgic reasons, because it was their first villain and that cover is so iconic, I agree.
Yeah.
But for... to get a weird villain and a James Gunn, like, it was perfect for what it was.
Yeah.
I don't see, like, if Zack Snyder did a, you know, added him in the Justice League, I don't think he could pull it off like the way James Gunn did.
Oh, he would have been so grayscale. He wouldn't have even been purple. He would have just been, like, a random color. Like, he would have been gray.
And how about, like, the little Starro's coming out of his armpit and just, like, I'm like, ooh. Like,
yeah, I thought that was great. Honestly, like, I really felt that they set it up for someone to, like, go through Starro's butthole. You know what I mean? When
they went through his eye, but not his butthole.
But, like, think about it. Like, when they were talking about Starfish and John Cena's in the – he's taking notes in the prepping, and he's like, Starfish is a slang on the streets for butthole. And, like, I thought that that's where Harley was going to wind up. Like, I thought she was going to enter Starro's butthole and destroy him that way, just to go, like, a later callback. You know what I mean?
Now, speaking of, what did you think of John Cena? Because I know he's not your favorite.
Ridiculous. Like, honestly, he was ridiculous. This was his best role in anything that he's done. And I texted you about this before. Like, I have a little more hope in the Peacemaker series. Because I thought that he was great in this. Not, like, great, but, like, he held his own. And the moments he was there, like, you got kind of douchebag Captain America vibes. He was funny, ridiculous in the underpants. But, like, the scene where him and Bloodsport are having the war, like, the killing spree against, like, Sol Saria's people. Mm-hmm. And, like, that one person sleeping and he just brings out a hatchet and just starts dicing him up in bed. I was like, Jesus Christ, it's like, this is way more violent than I thought. I think he did well in this. And I like that he's totally embraced this character.
The best part about that scene that made me crack up is they weren't bad people.
No, they were all, like, I knew that. I knew this was going to be, I was like, this is going to be all good people. Cause, like, we knew all, Alice Braga was in this. Because we posted a picture of her, right? And I was like, where does she pop up in this? And, of course, you know, she saves Kinnaman, Rick Flagg's character, Rick Flagg. And he's dicing them up. I'm like, oh, my God, these are good people. Like, they're just, like, eating hot dogs and, like, taking baths. Like, these aren't like, guerrilla terrorists. They're, like, just, like, freedom fighters. And they're killing them. I was like, this is a great scene.
King Shark is just chomping them and...
Yeah, I mean, you can't even call him King Shark, right? Did they call him King Shark at all?
I think once.
I mean, they referenced his lineage, which was very, very cool. And honestly, like, they get Stallone, right? It didn't sound like Stallone. Like, I feel like anybody could have done that voice.
When they showed the first character, the first thing I said, oh my God, it looks like from the Harley Quinn show, they need to get Ron Funches.
Yes. That's all I wanted.
I told you from the get-go, like, as soon as we saw that image, that image from the first still that we've seen in DC fandom is very reminiscent to the Harley Quinn animated series.
Yeah, I mean...
Minus the tracksuit.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been even better. But James Gunn does ensemble movies very well. And I think he made this, and I was doing this on the Galaxy Wars review. With this movie, I felt like I was watching the entire run of a comic series. You know what I mean? Like, how many times have we read a Suicide Squad where there's a large squad that goes through and they get blasted and then there's a diversion? Like, that was very comic book-esque. Like, I think he hit Waller on the head. Like, Waller was a perfect character. We got more character development and characters that, like, really only lasted like 5 minutes, right? Javelin, you know, his whole thing with Harley Quinn lasted until the final scene of the movie. Yeah. You know what I mean? Boomerang, who, when he died, I was like, shit, he was really right when he said, don't think we won't kill anybody. Cause I was expecting him to kind of ride off into the sunset at the end, maybe die via Starro, but the way you kind of had this, like, the movie had an actual story, and I think that lacked in the first one, right? Because this is kind of your soft sequel. Then like I said, I enjoyed the deeper connections of these characters like Rick Flagg and Bloodsport, who albeit felt just like a retread of Deadshot with the daughter issues.
It was, you know, a lot of people said that was going to be, you know, he was supposed to be Deadshot. They said it was never going to happen. But it was identical.
Yeah, it really was.
Identical. I mean, I liked Idris Elba. I like Idris Elba better than Will Smith. But, and I think he played that type of character better.
Yeah, but, I think Idris was probably my favorite actor of this movie.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I was upset about, and I've, you know, I knew it was going to happen, but the way they portrayed him was awful, was TDK.
Chuck. I know you're saying I knew they were going to portray him awful. What were you thinking they were going to portray him as?
Well, one, in the comics, I mean, obviously he's Iron Fall Off Boy. That's, you know.
Sure.
That's who he is. He beats the guys with his limbs. That's what I expected. Not for him to take the limbs off and they float in the air like, you know, Thing from friggin' Adam's Family and just do whatever. Like that, I hated that part. That was the worst part of the whole movie to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that was a dumb scene, but I thought it was kind of cool. This is the first superhero movie that Nathan Fillion hasn't been cut out of. So, like, let's give the man his props, you know. He was Wonder Man in the Guardians of the Galaxy, gets cut out of. And now, you know, he's TDK. And, like, they build him up on, like, whoa, you know, what was, like, your whole thing? And he's like, oh, it's TDK. That's my name. And then they're like, TDK, detachable kid. And, like, he rips his arms off. I thought that was cool.
But, like, I don't know. Like, him, like, controlling the arms as they're floating in the air, I didn't like that.
Yeah. I mean, that whole beginning scene where they're all dying and they're on the plane, I thought was great. Like, Pete Davidson was great.
I was so glad he died first, because I hate Pete Davidson.
Yeah, I know you do. Mongal was awesome.
She was good. She was good.
A lot of people want her to show up in the Superman movie with either Michael B. Jordan, or if they do a sequel, see her fight Superman, which I'm here for. Javelin was fun. You know, I give Flula Borg a whole bunch of credit, because my man gained 25 pounds of muscle for a 5-minute cameo. But also, like, just with this movie, like, I enjoyed the unexpected deaths. Like, I never saw Rick Flagg dying.
No. I was surprised with that.
When that happened, I was like, wow. Like, that hit me, because, like, Rick Flagg was very good in this movie as a character, right? There was more evolution. He wasn't as militant. Like, he let his guard down because he's kind of been through this and he knows who Waller is, right? And he kept moving. There was, like, you know, the Harley Quinn stuff where, like, she jumps in and she's like, sorry, I was taking a number two. And he was like, oh, geez, well, Harley's here. Like, there was more character development there with him. And when Peacemaker kills him, I was like, wow. That was, I think, the really big moment for me, where I was like, I don't know where this is going to go. Because, like, I thought for sure Peacemaker was going to be the last one standing. Because he said, you know, again, we go back to, like, the lines where he was like, I shoot smaller bullets. And I thought what we got between him and Bloodsport was going to be reversed, where Bloodsport shot at him. And Peacemaker shot a smaller bullet and said, I told you, bro. Like, I told you I shoot smaller bullets. And when he got shot and, like, air quotes, died, I was like, oh, man, this is, again, another moment where I was like, I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, I mean, and then I was like, all right. So, I mean, obviously the Peacemaker series was announced and filming. I was like, okay, is it just going to be a prequel? Is it going to be a... You know, where are they going with it? And obviously at the end credit scene, we see where they're going with it.
Yeah. What did you think of, like, the two characters that are coming over with Steve Agee and Jennifer Holland, who is James Gunn's wife?
I like their characters because, in, you know, they're in that war room and they were against a lot of what Waller was doing. And they ended up rebelling against Waller.
Yeah.
So I really like those characters. Because even, you know, a lot of stuff when You know, when she was flipping the switches and shit. And, like, they were like, whoa, like, you know, this isn't right. And then at that very end scene when, you know, she's telling them no. Not end scene, but...
when they smash her in the face?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit.
But I like those characters moving forward. Because yeah, they're good for a series. They're not a huge, you know, you're not getting Idris Elba to do a run of the, you know, be a secondary character in the series. So I like that they're going to be secondary characters and they're going to be, you know, they fit well for what we're going to get.
Would you want to see Idris show up in Peacemaker?
I do, but I don't think he would be in every, like, these people are going to be, you know, they're your supporting cast. Yeah, I think he'd be more of a cameo than a supporting cast.
Absolutely. And he's getting bigger as, you know, every day Idris Elba gets bigger. And with rightfully so, because he's a fantastic actor. Now he's Knuckles
in
Sonic 2, which I'm pumped about. The last thing I will say is the one thing I did enjoy about this is the way it was shot. Like, where there were, like, time stamp dates, like, in the scene with, like, whether it was, like, garbage or it was, like, feathers or stuff like that. I thought that was cool. And that scene when, like, Harley Quinn's shooting up the president's house and, like, all of, like, the bright colors and the birds are coming out. Like, I thought that was very comic book-esque. So, that was James Gunn at his best right there. It was very Guardians of the Galaxy 2 when Groot's dancing as they're fighting the giant monster.
The one character that we didn't really talk about, and I was impressed with him, was Polka Dot Man.
Yeah, I was going to ask you who your favorites were, but you know, we've been talking about David Dastmalchian forever. Been huge fans of him. At least I have been.
No, I have been. I mean, he's been in everything. You know, from the Dark Knight to Flash,
Ant-Man.
You know, he's been. And a ton of shit.
He is, if you look over his IMDb, right? So he's played Polka Dot Man, obviously. In The Long Halloween, he's played Calendar Man and Penguin. Shout out to Sean Gunn for also playing Calendar Man in Suicide Squad, doing double duty. He played Abracadabra in The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
He played Dwight Pollard in Gotham. He was in The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. So he's been everywhere. Like you said, like he's been DC's go-to. He's like that guy that you see and he pops up and you're like, I know him, but what do I know him from? This was his moment. And like, I think he absolutely delivered. He was a very Norman Batesy type character.
Totally. Yeah.
All of the scenes where like his mother is Starro, his mother is the team. I thought that it was very fever dream to go back to, you know, the Last Chances or Second Chances comic. It was very much a fever dream. His death to me was probably the most impactful because I was like, damn, I'd want to see him a little bit longer.
Yeah, because like at the end, I was like, okay, these are the people that are going to survive. It's going to be him, King Shark, Bloodsport, and Harley Quinn. Like, obviously, I knew Harley Quinn wasn't dying. Like, they're not going to kill her. I was pretty sure they weren't going to kill Bloodsport, but I'm like, okay. I was like, you know, Polka Dot Man's lasted long. Like, his whole thing when he, like, I'm not a huge fan of Polka Dot Man, so I don't know, like, his origin, but I'm pretty sure he didn't have a interdimensional virus.
He didn't.
I thought that was really cool. Like, they actually made it. And then you kind of feel bad for him because he was like, my mother, she worked for Star Labs and she tested and experimented on us. And this is what happened to me. So you kind of felt for him. And he was a very weird, you took it out of my mouth though, but very Norman Bates.
Yeah, he was a serial killer in training.
Oh, totally. And then at the end, he's like, I'm a superhero. And then he gets squashed by Starro. And I'm like, that to me affected me more than any other death because I was like, you're rooting for him. Yeah. You're rooting for him to be a better person. And like, he's found a team and found people that care for him. And then boom, he's dead.
Yeah. It kind of evolved in like with character deaths for me. Like at first, like when I thought King Shark died the first three times, I was like, oh my God, like why'd they kill him? And then obviously, you know, Rick Flag dies and I'm like, damn, Like, that was big. And then Polka Dot Man dies, and I'm like, damn, that was even bigger. And, like, the whole time, like, I'm watching this, and I know you know exactly what I'm about to say. Like, Sebastian, I was like, shit, if they kill Sebastian, I'm done. Like, I love that little rat. I thought he was amazing. He played a great role, a.k.a. D. Bradley Baker, which was, I mean,
yeah.
He played a rat, so I'm shocked it wasn't Bill Hader.
Did you see what Sebastian's real name is?
Jaws.
Well, there was two of them. And Jaws was one of them. Chris Pratt.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know that
Chris Pratt. That's almost as good as Crispy Bacon.
Yeah, that was a good one too.
Chris Pratt is amazing.
So, who was your favorite character? Because there were a lot of characters in this. Obviously, you know, we even got to see a little bit of Kaleidoscope.
Super weird, but yeah.
In the jail scene, and I actually, like, for a minute, I was like, shit, Crazy Quilt. But it wasn't.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I thought it was female Crazy Quilt.
Yeah, confirmed as Kaleidoscope. Play, but Natalie Saffron. But who was your favorite character?
I loved King Shark.
Yeah, he was great.
But I really think it was Peacemaker.
He was good.
I think John Cena embodied Peacemaker. And then, like you said, like, he's embracing it. He's going on talk shows dressing up as Peacemaker. He's going on red carpet when everyone else is dressed to the nines in tuxedos and suits and dresses, and he's in his Peacemaker costume.
Like, yeah, he's looking absolutely ridiculous.
No, and it is. And, like, when they made Shazam, I was like, it's going to be John Cena.
Yeah, we all did.
Like, but this is perfect for him. So I think he stole every scene that he's in. And so was King Shark. Like, my favorite three characters are probably Peacemaker, King Shark, and Polka Dot Man.
Nice. If we're going to go three, obviously Bloodsport was my favorite. I loved his dialogue. I loved his costume because it was totally different from the comics. I think they gave him a really good upgrade. That mask, that helmet was sick. Mm-hmm. The way he used his suit, and it was just like everything was kind of, he was like a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
Where, like, everything he touched turned into a weapon. I thought that was great. I loved Ratcatcher too.
Yeah, she was the heart of the film.
Yeah, and I think that's what I liked about her. And I liked the dynamic of her and Taika Waititi. Like, I could see that being spun off somewhere. Because, like, a lot of people are really here for Ratcatcher 2. And then finally, it's my third one was Milton.
Oh, she's like, who's Milton?
Yeah, and then she thought Bloodsport was Milton the whole time.
Yeah.
Were there some things that you didn't like about this, or, like, you would have changed?
Obviously, TDK.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that's up there. Because I love Arm Fall Off Boy, and they did him disservice.
Jesus Christ.
But I don't know. Like, it's what I expected. It was very weird. I don't think I would change too much. The cinematography was great. The special effects were great.
Soundtrack was pretty good.
The what?
Oh, yeah. Soundtrack.
And that's what I kind of expected from a James Gunn movie, because, you know, I wouldn't say it's reminiscent of Guardians, but how the soundtrack was utilized, it was very Guardians-esque.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that I would change.
Okay.
The first one would be more Starro. I think we could have done away with a lot of the president scene, like the sex scene with Harley Quinn. We probably could have done away with the torching of the birds. I think we could have kind of went away from that as well and included more of Starro, but I'm okay with what we got. The main thing that I liked about the first Suicide Squad was the stories of how everybody got captured, and they kind of left this one kind of like ambivalent or like ambiguous for these characters, and like some of it kind of gets later, like revealed later in there, like Savant was captured by the Black Canary.
Okay,
because he kills a canary, and James Gunn said that's actually who he was captured by. Mongol fought Superman, Bloodsport, you know, shot Superman. But besides that, like, Blackguard, what happened? Like, how'd he get caught? And Javelin, like, where does Javelin even fit into this universe?
Dude, that was great.
Yeah, Weasel and TDK, like, where did these people show up? Like, I would have liked more of that. And even Peacemaker. How did Peacemaker get caught? And maybe we'll explore that in Peacemaker the show. But I would have liked that kind of story in the beginning. Even if it's not flashbacks, right? If it was just like in dialogue, like when Pete Davidson's Blackguard is like freaking out over Weasel because he thinks it's a werewolf. Like, great scene. Don't get me wrong. Thought that was comic gold. But I would have liked them to be like, so how'd you get caught? And, you know, Batgirl caught me. The Blue Beetle caught me. Like, these are all Easter eggs for later down in the line, right? Did TDK get captured by, or did Weasel get captured by like Aquaman? You know, like I would have liked a little bit more of that. But besides that, you know, I thought it was good. I very watchable. I'd watch it again.
Yeah, definitely.
So when I grade DC movies against Marvel movies, it's in terms of like watchability, and a lot of them I wouldn't watch again. But this one I definitely would, because I think there's more wrinkles that I didn't get a chance to pick up on it. Like, you know, the creator of the Suicide Squad, John Ostrander, was in as Dr. Fitzgibbon. And I thought that was great. And I think that there's more little wrinkles in there that I'd like to see. But, you know, that's for another day. And I do think Peter Capaldi did very well.
Oh, yeah, he was great. My wife is like, why are there these spark plugs out of his head? I was like, he's a thinker.
Yeah, it would have been even better if Louis Capaldi, his nephew, was in this as well. Or at least got a song on the track.
Is that his real nephew?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, very distant down the line. But big question, will this get a sequel?
I would like to say yes, because I want to see it. It's getting, you know, wrecked because of the money it's making, or lack thereof. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But I hope it does, because I think it deserves it.
I'm very confused on the whole bad press on this movie, right? Like, it was certified fresh coming out. Everybody said it's James Gunn's best movie. And now people, the same websites that said this was James Gunn's best movie, are now doubling down and saying, like, James Gunn's name doesn't carry weight for non-fans. And that may be true, but you need to pick a side, right? This is a movie that came out on a streaming service in the middle of summer, in a pandemic where it's getting worse. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it was a hard R superhero movie. So there's a lot of things that get in the way of it, right? Had this movie just been Free Guy crushed it in the box office, right? Had this movie got released without an HBO Max release as well, simultaneously, I think we'd be having a whole different story.
No, I mean, I watched it on HBO Max. So,
yeah,
you know, they didn't get my $45.
But like, if you think about it, like, it would have made so much more money had HBO Max not been there.
Because people would have been like, oh, I really want to see it in theaters. And they're like, well, I can still see it at home. So why do that?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a sucker for punishment, where I go to this stupid site and they're just terrible when it comes to like critiquing things. And they're on one side of the fence on a Tuesday, and on Thursday they're like, oh, wait, we were wrong. Like, no, like, you stick to your guns. Like, you saw the movie. You thought it was James Gunn's best. Don't start there and just start, you know, shock value. Like, oh, this is a bomb. This is a dud. Like, no, this was maybe not what everybody thought it was going to be, and maybe not what you hyped it up to be, but it's still a watchable movie. This is better than the first Suicide Squad. This is better than 100%. Birds of Prey. Like, this is better than a lot of those movies. And yeah, I just, you know, the constant ass kissing and then the constant like brown nosing to, you know, the critics and all that shit like bothers me. But to the main question, will this get a sequel? I think it will, because I think James Gunn's name does carry a lot of weight for us, the people who are going to go see these movies, the people who these movies are written for and directed for, right? In a world where we don't have COVID, which is probably when the next Suicide Squad would come out, or even if it's one of those 37 HBO Max movies they want to release each year, it's going to do a lot better. And this is why what I think they should do in the sequel. So at the end of the movie, Waller's bribed that they have the footage and they're going to release it, right? If Waller blows anybody else up. So this is what I would do. If I'm Waller, I'm pissed and I want to kill them, right? And I need to bring in somebody who's a hacker. So you find like the best hacker out there who is a villain, right? Then you bring in the big guns. And this is where you get James Gunn able to play with the big toys in the DC toy box, right? He went small toys in this one. Passed up on some toys that I would have liked to see in there. Two people who didn't make the cut, Condiment King and Kite Man.
I want Kite Man.
They were supposed to be in it, and they didn't make the cut. So I'm a little upset about both of them not being in it. But this is what I would do. So you have a pretty decent team out there. So I would bring in, I would bring back Deadshot, because they opened the door for Deadshot to come in by not mentioning that he was dead. So I would bring in Deadshot. I'd bring in Orca or Grodd to go after King Shark, preferably Orca. I'd bring in Talon.
Oh yeah, yes.
I'd bring in Bane. And there's your Dave Bautista working with James Gunn again. And to get Harley Quinn back into the scenario, this is where you introduce Poison Ivy. Amanda Waller has her prisoner with a bomb in her head.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And there you have, you know, the love interest. You're setting up the relationship that everybody's kind of been clamoring for. You move further away from the Birds of Prey, and you move closer to Gotham City Sirens, or whatever you want to call it. And James Gunn can work with Margot Robbie again. And then you bring in somebody who plays Poison Ivy, whoever that you want that to be. And you got yourself a movie right there.
I'd be on board with that.
Yeah, and you can bring in shitty characters. Slipknot 2, Condiment King, Kite Man. You can bring them in. And they're characters who just die immediately like they do. You need to have a Slipknot in every movie. And Condiment King could be running with the big dogs. And finally, this is his moment, you know. That scene in and Kite Man, because they're mortal enemies, right? They have to team up. That scene in the Harley Quinn animated series where they're fighting over the wedding. And Condiment King's like, he's like really feeling himself like he's part of the Kardashian crew. Like he's the biggest person in the world. And he's like, dude, you just deal with Mayo. And he's like, no, this is, you know, this is his moment. Think about it in that movie. Like he's running with like Talon and like, and Deadshot. And he's like, yeah, I'm the king. I'm the Condiment King, the sauce, the Sultan of sauce. And he's like shooting sauces at everybody. He's got like Arby's sauce and Chick-fil-A sauce for your product placement. He's shooting, LeBron's probably got a sauce out there from Space Jam 2, shooting that stuff out there. And then boom, he's dead immediately with like a knife in his face.
And you just wrote the ballad of Condiment King.
I'm here for it. I mean, I'm absolutely here for it. And you get Alan Tudyk to play Condiment King.
And who I want as Kite Man, even though he's kind of in a DC, would be Joel McHale.
Yeah, I think he would be great. But you got to think of who would James Gunn cast? You know, obviously, like, could Manta, Black Manta, be in the Suicide Squad? Maybe. But I don't see him ever being part of the Suicide Squad. But like, could you get like Peter Serafinowicz, you know, who was in Guardians, right?
Yeah.
Do you get like Kurt Russell in this? Not as a Kite Man, but like
John C. Reilly,
like James Gunn could go out and he could, you know, he could bring in whoever he wants to at this point, right? Go out there and say, hey, you know what, I kind of like Elizabeth Banks, I want to bring her into this. Or his Chris Pratt, like he could bring him in there.
Yeah,
like I don't think Chris Pratt is going to be Kite Man, but no. What a cameo, right? Chris Pratt can play a douchebag pretty well. Like what a great cameo for him to just end as Star-Lord and go right into Kite Man.
Yeah.
Oh, did you also catch that Mantis was in this?
Yeah, she was in a strip
club. Tom Clements Eve. Yeah, she was one of the strippers. So very cool. I like that he keeps his people in there. The one thing I will say before we wrap this up is I don't think Batista would have been a better peacemaker.
No, I don't think so. Like, I like Dave Batista a lot. Like I said, John Cena was perfect for Peacemaker.
Yeah. I think Dave Batista, and you know, I've been sitting on it for a while when Batista was like, I don't want to do it because it's a bit role and I want to play with Zack Snyder in Army of the Dead. And I was like, that's a risky move. And then I saw the movie and I was like, first of all, Peacemaker, not a bit role. Getting a series on top of that, which maybe because it's John Cena, he got the series and people value him a little bit more than Dave Batista.
Yeah.
Where I think it should be opposite. I think Dave Batista is a better actor. I saw Fast 9 and John Cena wasn't great in that either.
No, he was not.
But when I look at it, I think he made the right decision. He got to work with a director that he's always wanted to work with, right? And also, he's kept the door open to play the role that he was meant to play, Bane.
Yeah, 100%. He's perfect for Bane.
Yeah, so I think they made the right decision. Let's go Geek Grader, 1 out of 10. What do you give this?
7.7.
Okay, I was right there with you. I'm going to give it a 7.9. Could have been better, could have been worse. I need to watch it again if I want to raise my score. But right now, after one viewing, 7.9. But that's it, dude. We're going to get out of here, man. I thought this was going to be a short episode. I'm glad it went a little longer because, you know, this is your last episode of August. Next week, we'll be back either with a guest or just by myself. I haven't decided yet. I just got to see where my schedule is. And the episode's going to be called TBD because I don't know what it's going to be. Maybe I talk about what if. Maybe I talk about what if not. I don't know. But we'll be back. I'll be back at least next week. Follow me, yeah, because it's just my show. Follow us on social media, The Active Geek Podcast, wherever you're on social media. Follow Chuck _ The Active Geek. Also follow him in California. If you see him there, say hello. What else we got? We've got two shows on the network. We've got Galaxy Wars Podcast every Monday. Tom and I just recorded our review of Wrath of Man, Guy Ritchie, Jason Statham movie, and we talk about actors that we want Guy Ritchie to work with, and some of them may or may not have been in the Suicide Squad. What else? We got Cage My IQ every single day on YouTube. If you like sports, mainly, if you like mixed martial arts, go to YouTube, subscribe to Cage My IQ, say that the Active Geek Podcast sent you, and we will shout you out on the next episode. And I'm on there every Thursday breaking down UFC fight nights and UFC pay-per-views. Chuck, it's been a pleasure. Enjoy California, my friend.
Yeah.
We will be back in September, the two of us. I will be back next week for the Active Geek Podcast. I am Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.